So that's what I said in this slide. I should have moved on a bit earlier, shouldn't I? But nevertheless. So what I'm saying here is that they do have many of the characteristics of forward contracts, as we described earlier. So they agree today to deliver something next year or the year after. They agree the price. They agree the delivery date. They agree how much should be delivered and what quality. So very much they have got these forward elements to them. But in a forward contract, we don't get that massive payment up front that we do in these wool contracts. So the difference between these wool contracts in the medieval times and a forward contract now is this massive payment up front, which the monasteries received. And that makes us worry that perhaps they're not just forward contracts, these. They're not just about managing risk and getting money early. They're also a way of disguising interest. And so what we thought, and it came about after we worried about this problem for a long time, is that they're both a loan and a forward agreement, but probably more of a loan. But a loan that we can probably find out how much interest is being charged upon, because we can then try and do some complicated finance stuff to backward out what the interest is, okay, being paid. And that's where I'm going to get onto the back of the complicated finance stuff, but I'll try and do it really quickly so no one understands. Okay. So why did they want these forward agreements? Well, the monasteries themselves, they want to know they can sell their wool for the next 10 years. And if they do it in one go, all much the better. And they also want the money now, because remember, they wanted to build these big buildings. Not only that, they had to pay lots of tax, not only to the king, also to the pope. So they had to pay out lots of tax to the pope and king. They'd also have a duty, and monasteries in medieval England and medieval Europe had a duty to care for travellers. So if you turned up at the monastery, you could knock on the door and say, I want to stay here tonight, and they'd have to feed you as well. And they also looked after pilgrims and the sick as well. Not only that, but if the king turned up, they'd have to look after the king as well. And they'd have to look at the after the king quite well. They'd have to provide him very nice meals, not just for him, but for all of his hundreds of followers as well. So the king turning up in any one year could be quite a big financial burden on a monastery. And there's an interesting story at Pipewell Abbey, the contract we looked at earlier, where the king then rode off with the best horse of the abbot as well and didn't return it, just because he could, because he was the king. So abbeys needed their money. Now, what about the merchants? Well, they wanted to have the best wool they could, and the wool in England at this time was the best wool in Europe. So it was the best wool available to them. And they wanted to get the best and a continuous supply of the best. They didn't want to come back every year and negotiate. They wanted to know, for the next 10 years, I've got the best wool on tap. And they also got a big discount by buying this way, because by giving the monasteries money in advance, they knew the monasteries would take less for the wool than they would selling it every day, you know, on a spot rate, what we call a spot, as in on the spot every year in the market. If you went to the market any one year, you'd pay much more than buying all this wool in advance. Okay? Now, it's difficult to know about what prices were being paid for wool at this time. And one of the things we need to know when we look at trying to calculate the interest on these contracts is what the wool was actually worth in any particular year. And this graph just shows that pretty much wool prices were stable. There's no real inflation here in medieval England like we have today. And you can see that the wool prices fluctuate where we know them, but in general they're following a steady line. And the yellow line in the middle, okay, they're following a steady line. So there's no real price fluctuations we need to worry about, okay? This is where it gets complicated now, and I'll try and rush forward so you've got some time for some questions. To value a forward contract, we need to know about various things. And it's called the cost of carry relations. That's just the complicated term for it. But this is how we value a forward. And all it's saying is the price to pay today for a commodity should be equal to the price. The price to pay, if I want the commodity next year, the fair price is the price today plus your cost for holding it for me for a whole year. Okay? So that's the storage cost or the convenience yield. And that's the formula, okay, where we've got the forward price, the current price, the interest rate, and the time. Okay, these are all these letters mean. They look complicated. I always get very scared by formula, but that it doesn't mean a lot other than those different things. Now, we know all these things. We know what prices were being paid. We know how long it was before they had to deliver it. What we don't know is the current price. Okay, we don't know what the spot price for wool was in England. It's not like now where you can open the newspaper and look at the spot price of any particular currency. So we don't know the spot price in England. And that was our big problem. How do we find out what wool was worth in any particular year? So this is the really complicated bit we had to do. And what we had to find out was where would we get the price of any of the spot wool in England? And this is where the Exchequer Schedule, which we spoke about earlier, when Edward I stole all the wool from the merchants, comes into play, because it detailed how much wool was worth in 1294. And from 1294, we can work backwards and forwards to look at what the spot price of wool was in any particular year by looking at other variables as well. So this is how we worked out the spot price. You might think now I'm going into the realms of imagination, but this is what we did. So we started at one point in time, 1294, and from that, we tried to work out using time series analysis, which is another econometric term, to try and find out what the price was in any particular year. Okay.